Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. If you spend any time at all in Forest Park, you are probably oblivious to some of the wildlife that resides there. Geese, squirrels, and ducks are easy to find. Some others manage quite well to keep their distance from walkers, joggers, and bikers. Among them, the great horned owl. People who are in the park every day have never seen one, unless they've walked with award-winning amateur naturalist Mark Lenshaw on one of his owl prowls. He's in the park several times a week, checking up on a pair of owls he's been following, photographing, and writing about for some 8 years now, almost to this very day. Mark Lenshaw joins me in studio. Mark, great to have you with us.
Thank you, Don. It's a real honor and pleasure to be here.
Why the great horned owl? You have this compulsion about them. Why?
I think there are three big reasons why I'm drawn to great horned owls. One is just coming out and connecting with nature. Sometimes not seeing the owls is okay, but just coming out to see them and taking a break from the regular modern world is just a great thing to do. Two, the scientific aspect. Great horned owls are the most widespread, commonly found owl in North America, but there's still a great deal to learn about them. And three, just the sheer aesthetic response. These are beautiful animals. I often call them the Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt of birds. And it's just a real treat to see them.
Well, I'm getting ahead of myself, but you name your owl friends, and Angelina and Brad are not among the names that I know of.
Not so far, yes.
Charles and?
Sarah.
All righty. Let's just back up a little bit. You talk about their kind of omnipresence and connecting omnipresence in this country and the connection that you make with them in the park. That's a difficult connect to make because they are very, very hard to spot.
Well said. I was going to the park for several years without seeing owls. I knew they were in the park. I'd read in reputable sources, talked to reputable people, and they said, yes, there are owls in the park. And I was going to the park to learn the park more thoroughly as well as check out its wildlife. And I was seeing great stuff, but I wasn't seeing the owls. But I was not surprised. I did not know much about owls, but I knew enough to know that they are incredibly hard to find. They're active when we're not, very well camouflaged, and they fly fast and silently.
How did you find your first owls in the park?
It was pretty dumb luck. I'm embarrassed to say this, that I walked right past them. It's a day I wish I had written down, but sometime in late August, early September 2005, I was walking in the park, and I passed this tree that I failed to look in. Now, the important part about that is, as a naturalist, and that's how I describe myself, a good thing to do is when you see something, like I had seen cool stuff in that tree before, when you see something somewhere, you make a note of it and always look there when you go there. But I didn't do that night. I was walking home from work, and I passed this tree, didn't look at it, was looking elsewhere, and I got past it, and I heard hooting. And I thought, oh, my gosh, that has to be owls. We're getting close to sunset. And I put it in reverse and went back to this tree, and there in the tree were two great horned owls.
Were they Charles and Sarah?
Yes, they were.
And when you came back the next day, were they still there?
No, that's the funny thing. I had very little success rate at first. That first sighting was pretty amazing because in 20 to 30 minutes, they hooted together in a duet, which is a beautiful sight and sound. I saw them fly, and they're powerful, gorgeous flyers. And the real cherry on top moment was when one of them chased a great blue heron, and that great blue heron got out of Dodge as fast as it could. So I went home and really started to begin doing my research as well as just getting out to look for the owls more frequently, and I had very little success, about one out of every 10 times. Enough to keep you going, but enough to be frustrating at the same time.
But that's changed significantly. I mean, you see them almost every time you go out now.
Almost every time. Actually, this year I had a break in a very long streak. I went out on November 18th to look for the owls, and I did not see or hear them. And usually at this time of year, they're easy to find or easier to find because they're very vocal, very active, and I could not find them. And that broke almost a 3.5-year streak of consistent consecutive sightings.
How many owls do you think there are in the park? Do you have any idea?
I would say there's about 8 to 10. There's another pair of great horned owls and several pairs of barred owls. I would say at least 2, maybe as many as 4 pairs of barred owls. And there might be some eastern screech owls here and there. I haven't seen that species since 2005, though.
I'm a little surprised that there would be so many, given the fact that we are, after all, on the edge of a city. There's a lot of noise. A major highway goes by. Mm. A lot of aircraft noise, if you will. Helicopters going in and out of barns all the time. You're talking about getting out of Dodge. If I were any self-respecting critter, I'd want to go someplace else.
Well, it's what's really interesting is that the park is a magnet for a lot of animals. But also many owls, and most especially great horned owls, are incredibly adaptable. Great horned owls are found in every state but Hawaii and in habitats ranging from swamps to deserts to suburban and urban areas. You're not going to find a great horned owl, say, in downtown St. Louis. That would be a little odd. But I know of several of them in heavily residential areas right in the St. Louis area, and it's incredible to go to someone's neighborhood and see one of the top predators in the country.
You know, one of the things that really surprised me in getting ready for this program was the notion that these owls are, what, 12 to 24 inches high, something like that?
18 to 25 inches tall is the range of great horns. Charles and Sarah are very large great horned owls.
And they weigh 3, 4, 5 pounds, something like that?
4 is about the maximum, 2 to 4.
Okay, now you talked about them taking on a heron,
yes.
Which is a considerably much larger bird.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what kind of hunters are they, and what kind of attributes do they have to take on an animal that's so much larger than they are?
Excellent. That was one of the things that really surprised me as well when I started doing my research, that I read that they have taken out great blue herons. The first real predatory attempt I ever saw them make was on the biggest, fattest raccoon I still have ever seen to this day. And the attributes, it's a combination of a couple of things. Very fast and powerful flight. They fly 20 to 40 miles per hour. And then their silent flight enables them to attack with immense surprise. So there is a real element of shock. And then their talons come into play. They have very powerful talons and very large talons. The diameter of their talons can be as small as 4 inches across to as large as 8 inches across. Very powerful leg muscles. And when the talons close, they lock. So if the animal struggles against them, the animal is only getting further impaled on the talons. And the amount of pressure that the leg muscles are able to put forth is quite something.
Do they eat the whole of their prey?
It depends what it is. Something small, say a small rodent, a bat. I have seen them catch bats in midair. That would be down in one gulp. Something larger, they're going to have to take their time with and tear it up piece by piece. But some of those pieces can be rather large.
You know, I'll mention to our audience now that you have a website, and we have a link to it on our website.
Thank you.
But you've got some very interesting video of the Charles or Sarah or both of them attacking and a bat,
mm-hmm.
and some other things that are going on in the forest that few of us ever see. I'm in there about an hour and a half every day.
That's great.
And it is great. I love the park. And I love the notion that these things are in there, but I've never seen one. What should I look for when I'm wandering around?
There's a lot to look for. There's also a lot to listen for. One of the funny things, once you see an owl, everything starts to look like one. Hornets' nests, squirrel nests, you know, particular branches on trees. It's good to look up for owls, but it's also good to look down for owls. For their droppings, which are called whitewash. They look just like the paint that Tom Sawyer used on the old fence. Their pellets, all the things they can't digest, fur, feathers, bones, insect exoskeletons, they compact it to a pellet, and that comes out as a gray, fuzzy, cylindrical shape. Also listen for other animals. When you're at the top of the food chain, the downside of that is that you're not very popular. So other animals see great horned owls and make warning calls. And that could be everything from crows to eastern gray squirrels to American robins.
Well, I'm not sure that I would recognize the warning sound from a crow. I mean, I know that they caw, and mm-hmm. I've heard that, but I don't know if that's a warning sound or just them talking to each other.
It can be. With crows, what they do very famously, and other animals do this as well, crows will mob owls. So you'll notice sort of a kind of background noise of crow activity, and then all of a sudden a noticeable spike in activity, both flight and vocalization. I've seen them mob the owls countless times, and there'll be times where, okay, we know the owl's kind of around here, and then, whoa, we just found it, and it really spikes up.
Is this happening during the day or at night or both?
It will happen as long as they are found. As long as someone sees the owls, they're not going to be generally happy about it. It's great that you mentioned, well, I don't know the warning calls. I led an owl prowl. Unusually in the morning for a local restaurateur. They're kind of busy at night. Mm-hmm. So we went out in the morning, and I was hearing warning calls of eastern gray squirrels, and I pointed this out to the woman and her daughter. And the lady said, "That's what that sound is? I've been hearing that all my life. I've never known what that is." And we're listening to the squirrels, and there's Charles 20 feet from the squirrels.
And squirrels being a prime candidate for the evening meal, right?
Yes, but a very tricky one. A fascinating thing about being a predator is that it's a tough lifestyle. Now, this was something I knew empirically from reading and so forth, that all predators, be they great horned owls or great white sharks, miss more than they hit. But it's been a totally different and enriching experience to see this night after night. The owls miss all the time. Now, they obviously catch enough to survive and thrive and even breed, but eastern gray squirrels, God, they go after those all the time, and they miss them all the time.
When you say miss them, just go into some detail as to what do you mean. I recognize the fact that they'll take on the bat in flight, but a squirrel, they're going to find it on the ground, I suppose.
On the ground and in trees. In mm-hmm. fact, in several years, and quite possibly this year, where the owls have nested, there are active squirrel nests in those trees. Occasionally people ask me, well, why did the squirrels move in there? I said, no, other way around. The squirrels were already there, and the owls moved in. The 2011 nesting season really stood out. I saw more squirrel attempts than I ever had seen before. So here's the owl watching, listening, deciding, okay, there's enough of an opportunity for me to spend my precious energy to make this attempt, and wham, off goes the squirrel. I missed it by 2 inches sometimes, other times by feet. Squirrels are very active and alert and agile and great vision and hearing and sense of smell.
I'm surprised that I and perhaps others walking in the park don't see more carcasses as a result of these hunts.
Carcasses tend to be rare. I have seen the most I tend to see is a lucky rabbit's foot with legs still attached. But then the pellets and the whitewash definitely you will see. But also part of that is knowing what that looks like, what that is, and even where to look for that. So, again, looking for pellets and whitewashes is a good way to find them. But yeah, I'll go a long time without even seeing a piece of an animal.
I have to take a break, but before I do, I just want to ask this question because I think it's key to people listening now who enjoy the park and maybe walk their dog in the park.
Mm.
Is this something maybe we shouldn't be doing at dark or after dark?
As long as you have a leash, that is totally fine. When I do see a small unleashed dog, I do ask firmly but politely the owner to leash their dog. A, it's the law, but B, there are things, and not just the owls, that can and will eat their dogs.
Well, Mark Lenshaw is our guest. He's an amateur naturalist who really is focused very, very heavily on the great horned owl, which can be found in Forest Park. There are several of them there, as well as other critters that most of us never see, but would seem to be quite exotic, perhaps, for an urban setting, but they're not. We'll come back and continue our conversation. Of course, we'd like to bring you into it. If you've ever had any encounters with either the great horned owl or any of the other, if I may use the term, exotic wildlife, in Forest Park or any of our parks in this area, we'd love to hear from you. 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take a tweet at STL on air. You can send us an email, talk@stlpublicradio.org. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as I continue my conversation with Mark Lenshaw. He's a naturalist. He spends a lot of time in Forest Park because he focuses on one of his passions, I guess we can say, Mark, is it not? And that's the great horned owl, which can be found in Forest Park, along with many other critters that most of us never see. But he has documented, and we have on our website, by the way, a link to his website. He has a lot of videos, a lot of photographs of things that he's seen and photographed over time. One question before I go to the phones, Mark, is the great horned owl is, of course, a predator.
Yes.
But like all predators, there's probably someone looking for a great horned owl to eat. Who are their enemies out there?
Very few. If a great horned owl is an adult, is sick, injured, or very oblivious, bears, coyotes, foxes, wolves, mountain lions, bobcats would be a threat. But they're going to do that very carefully and very judiciously. I mean, this is not only an animal that is a predator, it eats other predators, including other birds of prey. The great horned owl is the third tallest owl in North America, and it is known to eat the two owl species bigger than itself.
Most of its natural enemies, then, are not necessarily found in a place like Forest Park or Tower Grove Park.
Coyotes and foxes would be about it in terms of potential threats to them that live in those parks, yes.
By the way, I mentioned Tower Grove. Are a similar kind of activity going on there? Are some of our other large parks in the area?
Indeed, and even some smaller parks as well. Tower Grove has two pairs of great horned owls. One is quite well established. The other has been there for a few years. And Tower Grove is a real hot spot for migrating birds, as is Forest Park as well.
Right. Let's go to the phones. I have many questions, but our audience does too. And I think Kyle in North City has a question and a mystery he wants you to help him solve. So, Kyle, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm actually the horticulturist at the Bell Fountain Cemetery, and I'm actually at work right now. And unfortunately, in the last couple of weeks, we found two deceased great horned owls, no sign of struggle, nothing strange, no blood, nothing like that. And I was wondering if you might have any suggestions on what might have happened. It just seemed to have happened fairly suddenly, and to find two within such a short period of time seems so strange.
I'm really sorry to hear that, Kyle. Thank you for your question. One quick question for you. They weren't near roads or anything like that?
Well, we have the roads that go through the cemetery, but no, honestly, not really. One was in one of the sections, and the other was fairly close to the road, but I don't think that was part of the issue. Also, I should just add that anytime you'd like to come owl hunting at the cemetery, more than welcome to do so, and feel free to get in contact with us again in later and come in the evening. I'd love to know some of the species that are actually flying around the cemetery.
Thank you. Cemeteries are a great place to find owls. In fact, one book I have says if you want to see an owl in the western United States, a great horned owl in the western United States, go to a cemetery, an old cemetery outside of town, and you're going to find one. And thank you for the invite. My thought that that comes to mind right away is possibly secondary poisoning. If they ate a rodent that was poisoned, great horned owls and other birds of prey are susceptible to secondary poisoning. That is actually quite a big problem. Another possibility is they may have been quite old and just expired naturally and you found them. But I would definitely start to look at secondary poisoning as the primary possible cause of death.
Kyle, a quick question. Maybe I missed this. Did you find the two dead owls together at the same time?
No, one was found here very recently within the last couple of days, and the other was found about 2 weeks ago. So they were found different places and different times.
All right. Well, thanks for answering that. I asked that question, Mark, because owls mate for life, and Charles and Sarah have been together for a long time, for instance.
Yes, sir. Great horned owls definitely mate for life. Other species are a little more footloose and fancy-free. Great horned owls have the longest breeding cycle of any owl in North America. It's the vast majority of the year, and they do mate for life. It's both romantic and practical. It's romantic in the sense that they stay together through thick and thin, but they also just don't have time for dating and dalliances.
Particularly if there's not an overly large population, as seems to be the case in Forest Park. How many offspring might we expect from a Charles and Sarah, for instance, over a period of time?
Quite a lot. If Charles and Sarah are nesting right now, they've been mating since December 9th. Cumulatively, in the 8 years I've been watching them, they have had 18 owlets. So 2 to 3 is the average clutch size, the average number of eggs for a great horned owl. They don't always nest every year. The fact that Charles and Sarah have nested every year speaks well to them, both as healthy and successful individuals, but very importantly as to the ecological health of Forest Park.
How so?
If you're not going to have a top-tier apex predator hanging out and reproducing in an area, be it a park or a farm or what have you, unless you have all the building blocks necessary for them to live. If you have healthy water, healthy plant life, diversity of species in all sections of nature, you're not going to have top of the food chain predators.
Let me point out, too, as long as we're talking about mating, that among the videos that you have on your website, also, which we're linking to,
stlpublicradio.org.
You have actual videos of them mating.
Yes, yes. This is an area that I'm at some point hoping to publish in. And this is just another example of how much we still have to learn about owls in general and great horned owls in particular. Mating was not observed of great horned owls, was not observed and written about in the scientific literature until the 1990s. And again, this is the most widespread, commonly found owl in North America. And this huge part of any organism's life cycle had never been seen.
So should we issue a disclaimer and say don't watch it with young children?
Perhaps you might get some questions that you may not want to answer just yet. When I give talks on the owls, I kind of gauge my audience in a number of ways, but including, okay, do I talk about mating and do I show mating?
All right, and they kick the owlets out of the house fairly early, don't they?
They leave the nest relatively quickly, about 6 to 8 weeks of age. They fledge. They make some of their first flights, but they remain in their parents' territory for many, many months. They take a very long time to become independent, which is really interesting because they grow up physically very fast. They can be 80% adult height and weight in about 2 to 3 months, but they will remain dependent on their parents for 6, 7, 8, sometimes even 9 months.
Are any of them ever banded so that they can be tracked?
I have not done that. I don't have the proper permits and licenses. I have thought about reaching out to people that do, but I think if there is any semblance of a rapport and perhaps even trust that I have with Charles and Sarah, I would be hesitant to do that not wanting to break any sort of rapport or trust.
I want to come back to that issue. But before I do that, and while we're talking about mating, we'll bring Thomas in, calling from St. Louis. He wants to get in on this part of the conversation. Go ahead, Thomas. You're on the air.
Hi, this is Thomas. You took me on an owl prowl last spring for my first great owl report. I want to know how many times the owls have mated and how many babies they'll have and what the baby boy will be named and what the girl babies will be named.
Excellent questions, Thomas. Thank you. I'm glad you remember coming out on the owl prowl. Last year I led 49 owl prowls. This year I went even more. I led 57 owl prowls. So far, they have Charles and Sarah have been mating since December 9th, and I've seen them mate 16 times, including twice on the same night on December 22nd and December 25th. I don't know how many youngsters they will have. I've learned not to count my owlets before they hatch.
That's
but,
terrible.
Oh, thank you. But given their past, 2 to 3 is what I would expect. Thank you for asking about names. I've got a few names in my brain, but I tend to wait to see how many owlets they have before naming them.
I saw a presentation that you made, and you had names in memoriam. Do you name them after friends who are deceased, that sort of thing?
Yes, it can be family. It can be friends. I've even named one after a beloved cat of some friends and people that I mentor when it comes to great horned owls. Other times, it will if most of the time when they have had three owlets, I'll name them after, say, characters in a show or a movie. And that, there's a real reason behind that, because the owls lay their eggs at different times. It's called asynchronously, and then they hatch at different times. So there's a real difference in age. And so often when they have three owls, I'll name them say in 2008, the first time they had three owlets that I saw, I named them after the kids on The Simpsons, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie. I love the show, and I thought, well, this will help me keep track of them by age. In terms of names and the sex of the owls, I never know if I'm right or not. I use male names. I use female names. I have about a 50-50% chance of being right. But that's even something scientists don't know, and yet another thing that we still have to learn. We do not know what the sex ratio is among great horned owls. I mean, obviously there's enough males and females for them to keep breeding, but that is not known.
But, you know, with most birds, the male of the species is generally the more brightly colored, if you will, more decorated, if that's the right word. Is this not the case with the owls?
That is not the case with most great horned owls. But there is a difference in the sounds that they make as well as their size. In most birds of prey, including great horned owls, the female is larger than the male. It's called reverse sexual dimorphism. So Charles is a big guy, but Sarah is even bigger. And then their hoots are different. The male tends to have low, long, deep notes. And the female, shorter, higher notes, and more of them.
Are they talking to each other when they're hooting?
There's definitely communication between them, as well as to the rest of the world. When they hoot in duet, it's thought to have a couple of purposes. One, a very important territorial declaration. Hey, everyone, remember us. This is our place. Stay away. Two, very much a pair bonding exercise as well. In fact, when they mate, not always, but usually when they mate, it's at the peak of a duet.
A duet. Sounds nice. Let's go back to the phones. Bring in Daryl calling from Kirkwood. Good question, Daryl. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. This summer, we had an owl that was identified as a barred owl that sat down at about 11 o'clock in the morning in the sunlight in our kitchen window. I took a picture of it. My son and I sat and looked at it for about 20 minutes. It kept looking at us. It was preening its feathers around its eyes and its head. And I was always told that owls don't come down and perch below 10 feet. They just come down to hunt. And the other thing, I've always learned that they were nocturnal. So I want to know how rare this is of an incident that I would have an owl sitting on my windowsill.
The windowsill, that's a pleasantly rare, very cool sighting. Thank you for sharing that with us.
I'll take a picture if you'd like.
please send it my way. My email address is on my website.
And send it to us also, stlpublicradio.org.
Owls can be active during the day. Barred owls in particular are known for being often quite vocal during the day. I have heard them in Forest Park at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Did it appear to be a young owl or an adult?
Well, I thought it was a beehive, and then I realized that it would have taken longer than a day overnight for a beehive to be built. And right as I was thinking this, it turned its head and looked directly at me. It was about the size of a gallon of milk. You know, I think that's a probably accurate size. And one of my neighbors who's an outdoorsman said, oh, that's a barred owl. I showed him the picture. He said, that's a barred owl.
May have been a youngster, but I would definitely not rule out an adult. You know, the proof will be in the pudding with your picture. But, yeah, they can be active during the day. Great horned owls are notoriously opportunistic predators and have been known to catch prey during the day. I mean, they tend to be more nocturnal and crepuscular. Crepuscular was just one of the many words I learned studying the owls. That means active at the edge of day and night. But the vast majority of pictures I've seen of great horned owls with prey, the pictures were taken during the day.
Okay, and well, by listen,
I appreciate that. Don, what did you say I could email this to?
STLpublicradio.org. Just go to our website. I'll give you a better address in just a moment on the air. So just
okay. I'll hold tight, and then I'll send that off to you.
Okay. Well, we'd very much like to have that. And for the record, Mark, horned owls don't have horns.
They don't have horns. It's a funny thing about the name. The name is descriptive. It looks like horns. Owls have other similarly confusing names, such as the short-eared owl and long-eared owl. All of those ears or horns are called tufts. And this was one of the many things that I didn't know about owls. And when people say, oh, I didn't know that, I said, it's okay. It's all right if you don't know. We're going to learn about it now. The tufts are just bits of feathers, but they incredibly do look like ears or horns, and they have complete control over these tufts. And the tufts can also, you know, reflect emotional and emotional state and things like that. Yeah.
By the way, the address to send that picture to for the previous caller is talk@stlpublicradio.org. Do send it to us, and we'll put it on our website. Got to take another break now. We're talking with Mark Linshaw. He's an amateur naturalist, and if you haven't gotten the point by now, you haven't been listening very closely. We're talking about the great horned owls, which can be found in Forest Park and a lot of other places in our area. But Mark spends a lot of time looking at them and for them in the park. Takes people on regular tours to do the same. We'll talk about that when we come back and take more of your calls as well. I'm particularly interested in talking to Al in West County, so Al, stay with us through this break. Back in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Back to our guest, Mark Linshaw. We're talking about the great horned owls of Forest Park and other wildlife there. But let's bring Al from West County into the conversation. I can't wait to hear what he has to say and do. Go ahead, Al.
Congratulations, Al. You have an owl. That is a barred owl. Strix varia is the scientific name. One of the most common owls in Missouri, and only one of two owls in Missouri that have brown eyes, the other one being the similar-sounding, in terms of name, barn owl, very different vocalizations. All the other owls in Missouri have yellow eyes.
Okay, great. There's a pair, and they don't mind keeping me up at night.
I have had similar reports of people say, oh, I've got these owls in my yard, in my neighborhood, and I'll say, oh, that's great. And people are generally enthusiastic, but every once in a while I do get a similar comment where they say, yeah, you're not there at 1 in the morning when they're waking me up.
Oh, no, I don't mind at all. I love nature, and I love the sound of nature, so no problem here.
Well, excellent.
Thanks for your call. Thanks for the sound effect. It reminds me a little bit of car talk with when we're going that route, but that was a lot of fun. Thanks so much for being with us. With regard to their eyesight, I've always heard that owls have extraordinary eyesight. Is that true?
Very true. Yeah. An amazing fact, and sometimes I have to flesh this out a little more. The eyes of a great horned owl are as large as any adult human being. And sometimes people say, that's kind of neat. Then I have to point out to them, this is an owl that would come up to about your knees, and it has the same size eyes that you do. Think a moment on that. Not only very large eyes, but the portions of their brains devoted to vision are noticeably larger. They don't have spherical eyes. They have tubular eyes. And each eye can focus independently, almost like having two different cameras, and very well adapted for gathering light and processing light.
Extraordinary. Extraordinary. Let's go back to the phones. I just lost a thought there. I had something I wanted to ask, but it'll come back to me. Let's bring in Barb calling from Olivet. Barb, go ahead.
Hi, are you there?
We're there. Go ahead.
Oh, I just wanted to tell you this wonderful story. I live in Olivet, and we've had a pair of mating owls here for at least 8 years. One year, we let our dogs out back, and we heard a big ruckus, and it was in the evening, and we went out, and here was this giant baby owl with his wings spread as wide as he could, snapping his beak at the dogs. So we brought the dogs in, and I called Wildlife, Wildlife Sanctuary or Bird Sanctuary, and they said, you're going to need three people. One person to throw a towel over the bird, one person on the other side of the fence to lift the bird over to, and the third person to hold the broom and beat off the parents as they sweep at you. I thought that was hysterical. And then within a couple of weeks, we saw the mother and two baby owls up on branches, and the mother had something in her mouth. And as the babies would hop up to the branch where she was, she would hop again to another branch above them, like making them hop through the trees after her to get fed. It was just a wonderful evening I spent with my entire family watching this mother owl train her babies. It was just a great story, and I just wanted to pass that on.
Thank you so much for doing that. That's great that you saw both of those very unique moments with the owls. World Bird Sanctuary was exactly right. You want to be very careful with the parents when they are nesting or when they have youngsters. It's very important to keep discreet distances from them. The scientists that go up to the nest of a female great horned owl, part of their preparation, and this is, keep in mind, they're doing legitimate scientific work, but part of their prep includes putting on a hockey goalie mask, thick padded protective clothing. The way I often phrase it is, would you, smart people that you are, mess with a raccoon, a very aggressive, smart animal? Most people say probably not. And I retort with, well, don't mess with an animal that does. And it's great you saw the mother with prey and urging the youngsters to step up to the game. The youngsters take a very long time to become independent, and anything and everything the parents can do to facilitate that is very important.
We had a questioner send an email wondering about finding them in Heman Park in University City. I know the answer must be yes.
I would not be surprised. Right. I don't know definitively. That said, I've heard from numerous people over the years living in University City that, yes, they hear great horned owls. They've heard eastern screech owls. Heman Park would not be a shocker.
You know, I remember the question I forgot a moment ago. We're talking about the eyesight. Eyesight is obviously important for the hunter, the animal of prey. But they also need that eyesight because they'll eat a raccoon or hunt a raccoon, but also insects.
Yes.
That surprises me.
It's amazing. This summer in August, I saw two kind of teenage raccoons in a tree. In fact, a tree in which the owls have nested four times. Later that evening, Charles went for the raccoons, missed them. 5 minutes later, he was down on the ground chasing and eating insects. He wasn't able to get his Thanksgiving dinner, which a raccoon definitely would, but he thought, okay, I missed that. I can have popcorn for dinner.
An appetizer, perhaps.
Exactly. Whatever. You know, it's a big risk, big reward versus smaller risk, smaller reward. And it just shows the incredible flexibility of great horned owls as individuals as well as the species.
We have a couple of calls here from out of town. Let's get them in as time allows. One is from Chip, who is calling, looks like Tulsa, Oklahoma. Chip, is that right?
Yes, that is. I'm actually on the road right now. Mark and I, we were high school classmates in Washington, D.C. And Mark, I'm just really glad to be able to talk to you on the phone after so long. But
hey, Chip.
My question is, by the way, I was excited to hear about you naming the owls after the Simpsons characters, but my question is, how old are the owlets when they are to leave the parents' territory, and by what mechanism are they forced to leave the territory?
Excellent questions, Chip. This is a real thrill to speak with you. Thanks so much for calling. The owlets are between 6 to 9 months of age when they leave the parents' territory. This last year was a classic example of how long the breeding cycle is. Charles and Sarah started mating on December 7th, started nesting December 31st. Our best guesstimate is that the owlets hatched in mid-February. The last night that I saw one of the owlets was September 17th. That's a long time of dependence on the parents. The mechanism, that's a fabulous question. The mechanism is two steps if need be. The first step always happens, and I often pass this step on to parents of, say, teenagers or kids in their early 20s. The parent owls stop feeding the owlets. You're done. You're cut off. If the owlets don't get the message, the parents will literally chase them off. If you go to my website, you'll get a link to my YouTube page. And on my YouTube page, there's a video from July 29th, 2011 of Charles chasing one of the owlets clear out of sight. And that was the last night we saw owlets that year.
What is the average lifespan of a great horned?
Donna, that is a question I wish, and anyone that studies great horned owls wish they could say. And all the reading I've done, and I've done extensive reading on these guys, just as an example, I had one book on owls when I began this. I now have over 40. Mm-hmm. I have read two pieces that sort of kind of took a stab at it, and they said 10 to 12 or 12 to 14. One of the biggest questions I have is how old are Charles and Sarah? They're at least 10 to 12 years old. I've been watching them for 8. They generally sexually mature at age 2 to 3. They've been breeding every year. But they could be 14. They could be 15. They could be 23. The record age is well known. It's 27 or 28 years and 7 months.
Wow.
Very long time. Mm-hmm. But like any other record, it's an extreme. It's like saying, oh, sure, we're all going to live to 115.
Let's take another long-distance call. Chris in Rhode Island. Go ahead, Chris. You're on the air.
Hey, Mark. It's Chris Gurley. Doing a great job as always. And, Don, thank you for getting Mark on the air. I just wanted to call and just let people know, as engaging and informative as Mark is on the air, I have firsthand experience of how addictive it can become watching the owls. I spend lots of time in the park 9 months out of the year, every day, and after a long day, I went up to this fellow with a backpack on, looking up in the trees, and asked the question, well, what you looking at? And I can't tell you, I guess it's 5-6 years ago, it's led to many, 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 many nights of fascinating time learning about the owls with Mark, and he just does such a great job, and I just appreciate you giving him an opportunity to get on the air and share his passion. So thank you, and Mark, we look forward to seeing when we get back home.
Thank you so much, Chris. Great to hear from you all the way in Rhode Island. My best to Barb and her mom. Chris is and Barb are one of a few people that I've become a mentor to, and that was a real surprising development out of this whole process. I mean, I thought me a mentor, really, was the state prison closed or something? You couldn't get anyone better. But Chris and Barb and Brenda Henty, I even have an owl mentee in the Philadelphia area, Pam Dimler. I'd love sharing the owls with people in so many different ways, be it prowls or talks or on the air like we are right now.
How does one get involved in an owl prowl in the park?
Very easy to do. I do them all year round. This year I did more than one a week. If you go to my website, you'll find my email address. My website is forestparkowls.blogspot.com. Send me an email and we'll find a day that works for us. It's kind of like saying, oh, hey, let's have dinner. I'm going to be in the park anyway. Let's just find a time that works for both of us.
You do it all times of day. It doesn't have to be necessarily at dusk or dark.
It does have to be. Timing is important. It does. We meet about an hour before sunset. That is pretty important. The analogy I make is, you know, if you came to, you know, my office and said, hey, Mark, where were you? I said, well, what time did you come there? Oh, 3 in the morning. Well, it's not the best time. I can often find the owls during the day, but it is kind of like watching me at 3 in the morning, not doing all that much.
Okay. All that information you just heard is repeated on our website, stlpublicradio.org, because we have a link to the website that Mark just mentioned. I've got some emails here. Time's getting away, Mark. I want to go through these very quickly if we can.
Definitely.
About 10, 12 years ago, we played tennis at AAA courts, now Highland, and the tennis off of Clayton and Forest Park. Thousands of small startling-type birds swarmed the skies, moving between trees near tennis courts, going to different parts of the park. In recent years, no birds at all, a few dozen maybe. What's going on with birds generally in the park?
Generally, things are good in the park. What you may have seen that night was just a particular gathering, probably of European starlings. But overall, the park continues to be a real magnet for birds, both permanent residents and migrants.
Until Charles and Sarah get going on it, right?
they chip away.
Chip away. Another, well, we used to see quite a few small hawks, red-tailed, I think. Are there many of those left in the park?
Yes, there are red-tails in the park. Red-tails and great horned owls often share some of the same areas, kind of a day shift, night shift dynamic. That said, red-tailed hawks are a threat to young great horned owls, but great horned owls are a threat to red-tailed hawks of all ages and sizes.
Email from Debbie. There are two regular great horned nesters right off the bike trail in Clydesdale Park and Afton. The babies fledgling in October and March have made my winters the last few years beautiful, easy to photograph with my iPhone.
Great, great comment, Debbie, especially about winter. I was never a huge winter fan. I was always like, okay, this is a nice day, but often a season to endure. Watching the owls, especially watching them start life anew each winter, has really made winter more special and attractive for me.
Another caller here, Shelley in Ellisville. Go ahead. You're on the air with Mark Lenshaw.
Hi, I'm glad to be on the air. I live in Ellisville, and I live behind a park off Manchester Road, and I've got, I'm not sure if they're barn owls or great horn, but they hoot, and when I hoot back at them, they respond to me. And then I lived in Wildwood years ago, and I had one that actually was at an atrium window, and he was, you know, in the branches, but yet he would turn around. He knew we were there, and he sat there for 30 minutes,
wow,
you know, just looking at us, and it was just such a beautiful experience. But, you know, do they respond to humans? I mean, obviously they're talking to each other. I mean, I believe that anyway.
They do respond, but it is this is one of those things where if you didn't know, it's okay. But let's take a moment to flesh it out a little more. Using calls, whether your own excellent mimicry or recorded calls, you want to use very judiciously, and you definitely do not want to do it during the owl's breeding season. The analogy I make is imagine you're at home, you're warm, safe, secure, everything is good, when all of a sudden you hear a complete stranger's voice from the other room. All of a sudden, you're a little less comfortable. You might be talking to them, but you may not want to be having that conversation. So definitely be conservative with your approach of making calls or using recorded calls.
You mentioned, Mark, that they're all over the country, but are they endangered in any sense, and are they protected as well?
Great horned owls are protected by the Migratory Bird Act, which was signed in the early 20th century, and there are other state protections about them. But even not all that long ago, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, legal, not hunting so much, but kind of shooting them for bounty was encouraged by many states. And I think one of the real fascinating things about great horned owls is that we've, so many big, powerful predators have been, extirpated from so many areas. Missouri, unfortunately, a great example of them. But through it all, great horned owls have managed to hold on. I mean, we used to have grizzly bears in this state, but we still have great horned owls.
We're going to stop it right there. Mark Glenshaw, thank you so much for being with us. A fascinating discussion about something I think a lot of people said, oh, who cares about the great horned owl? I think many of them now say, gee, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us.
You are very welcome, Don. This has been a pleasure to be here.
And again, more information on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Tomorrow on this program, we'll take a look at the top news stories of 2013. What do you think the top story was this year? Send us a tweet at STL On Air or email talk at stlpublicradio.org. Archived versions of past St. Louis On the Air programs available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.